Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Remember when we thought that the internet would allow people to break free of the chains of the cubicle and commute and work from wherever and whenever you want? That didn't quite happen, thank Yahoo and Marissa Mayer. But according to my next guests, non-traditional, more flexible work environments are in our future, and they have advice for employers and employees to take advantage of technology for a more humane working life. They are Ryan Coonerty and Jeremy Neuner, the co-founders of Next Space Co-working and Innovation, and the authors of a new book called The Rise of the Naked Economy, How to Benefit from the Changing Workforce. Ryan and Jeremy, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for having us.
First of all, why the term the naked economy, other than that it's a great word to sell books with?
Well, if you have body image issues like we do, you'll be happy to know that naked is just a metaphor. What we really mean is, you know, over the past century, we've wrapped the age-old notion of work in layers of extra stuff, you know, commutes and cubicle farms and pension plans and 2 weeks of vacation and healthcare benefits and even slightly creepy office holiday parties. So in the book, we're arguing that if we want to succeed in the 21st century economy, if we want to maintain our competitiveness, and if we want to create jobs and allow people to operate at their productive best, we need to strip the idea of work naked and return it to its much more essential definition, which is, you know, trading your time, labor, and talents for meaningful compensation.
And how far and wide in the workforce can you apply this? When you write that work has morphed from a physical place to a kind of mindset of shared goals and values, maybe not for most people, right? Telecommuting has not replaced the 9-to-5 job. All you have to do is get on the subway or the New Jersey Turnpike at those hours, and you'll see that the traditional workday is very much the norm for most people. So is it, you know, you guys come from the Silicon Valley area, I gather. So is this mostly a sort of tech sector future that you're writing about, or can it be more broadly applied?
We think it can be more broadly applied. I mean, right now there are 1 billion mobile workers worldwide, and that number is growing exponentially. People still, and this is one of the things we argue, is sitting at home by yourself in your pajamas is not the most productive way to access your talents or to participate in the marketplace. You need to be around other people, but how you're going to be around other people is going to be very different. Do you need to show up to one place at one time to be with all your coworkers, fighting traffic both there and back, or can you work flexibly at a variety of different places? And what we're seeing is that's what people's lives are about now. You see people, for good and bad, working in their office and then working on the sidelines of their kid's soccer game, at cafes. And if we can start to create some strategies and public policies that reflect that reality, we think everyone's going to be much happier and more successful.
Did you say 1 billion people? That's a sixth of the world's population. We're not anywhere close to that, right?
Well, 1 billion people work mobily, meaning that they can work at a variety of different locations, and we're and that is happening more and more and more as people as technology grows and also as demographics grow. We're seeing that baby boomers who are aging out of the workforce are staying in the workforce longer, either because they want to or they have to, but they're going to work differently. They're not going to work 40 or 50 hours a week at a place because they have to take care of aging parents or grandkids or explore, you know, partial retirement and allow them to travel. And younger workers have the same values and the same needs. And so that demographic shift is going to drive a major change in how, when, and where and why we work.
We're with Ryan Coonerty, Coonerty and Jeremy Neuner, authors of The Rise of the Naked Economy, How to Benefit from the Changing Workplace. And listeners, we want to hear from employers and employees who want to embrace this more flexible, more naked economy but don't know quite how. Employers, you have questions for our authors who do give a lot of advice in their book. Call with your questions about how to shift the culture of your office to be more flexible but still as productive. 212-433-WNYC. Employees, call with your questions about how to break free from the cubicle and commuting and soul-crushing In Work Lifestyle, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, with your questions or comments for our guests. I want to ask you about your chapter called Dude, Where's My Pension? Retirement in the New Economy. And you say it's not going to be pension-based, and that's pretty clear because employers aren't basically doing that anymore. But you also say it's not going to be 401k-based. So how are the future workers of the world going to get to retire as you see it?
Well, we one of the things that we talk quite a bit about in the book is how what we've come to think of as the normal social contract, right, that you get a job in your 20s and you work for 30 or 35 years and you retire in your 50s or 60s, and, you know, we've basically traded our freedom for that stability. And it was a pretty good trade-off for a lot of people for a good long while in our society and in our economy. But if, you know, if people aren't going to have employers, right, if people are going to be using their time and their talents for compensation through other means, whether they're going to be freelancers or independent contractors or contingent workers, what's the basis going to be for how we get those other needs met that work has traditionally provided, and whether that's retirement or benefits or paid time off or whatever. So we think that ultimately a lot of those things aren't going to come from employers anymore. They're going to come from the workers. And as long as you don't have that contract with the employer anymore, what you gain in your freedom to be able to not have to do the cubicle and the commute that we've been talking about, you do lose a little bit in stability. And what Ryan and I are arguing is that we need to come up with better ways from a public policy perspective to attack these things.
But do you have one? If it's not pensions, if it's not 401ks, where does that actual retirement money actually come from?
It's going to come from you. I mean, it's going to come from the fact that you're going to have to be more responsible for how you save for your retirement, right, or how you get your health care benefits. So, yeah, it's a lot more of a worker-centric
world.
But
that's not good, right? We used to talk – well, I don't know if that's worker-centric or if it just gives employers all the power. We used to talk about the three-legged stool of retirement, Social Security, pensions, and personal savings. If pensions are going away, then it's a two-legged stool. There's pressure on Social Security because of demographics. Are you saying that employers – should be let off the hook entirely?
Well, if you take our argument all the way to the end extreme, there aren't going to be any more employers. Obviously that's not going to happen for a long time, but that's certainly the end point of the economy that we're envisioning.
Really? You mean everybody's a private contractor making deals with everybody else who's a private contractor?
We're pretty close to that already, or not close. We've taken a huge step in that direction. By 2020, 40%, 60 million Americans are going to be part of this contingent workforce. That's a huge number of people that aren't going to have traditional employers.
But what does that mean if there are no? If I'm the next Steve Jobs and I invent the next iPod, and I want to hire people to flesh out the design and then build the thing and then market the thing, why aren't I going to be the employer and people are going to be my employees?
Well, I think in Apple's a perfect example where you come up with a product among a core group of team members that have formed around this product or this company or idea, and then they go to places like IDEO to have it designed, and then they go to PR firms to have it promoted, and then they go to accounting firms to figure out the tax implications and everything else.
And all those firms hire employees.
All those firms are going to either have a small group of employees, but they're also going to be able to access a global talent pool through a variety of online platforms that then they can pull in on a project by project. They're not going to – people with offices costing as much as $100,000 per year to put somebody in office that's empty two-thirds of the time we now are seeing these huge inefficiencies in the marketplace where you're going to be able to, instead of paying somebody to sit at the desk 40 hours a week, of which they work 30 hours a week and 10 hours a week, they're socializing or on Facebook or whatever, you're going to be able to hire them on a project-by-project basis. And you may hire the same person over and over and over and over and over again, but the traditional employee employer relationship is going to change dramatically. And just going back to the retirement, you know, there are ways to have people save, and there are ways to incentivize that with public policy and tax in through the tax code. So we just think because right now 401ks are increasingly, they're becoming less and less matched, less and less investment from the employer. So let's recognize that trend and give people an opportunity to work collectively to save the money for the retirement, and not be locked into an old idea that's quickly going away.
Karen in Merrick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Karen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Well, I've worked in the large offices. I've worked in the cubicle. I work for myself now. And I got to tell you, it's not fun. I do contracting. I work on my own schedule. I do when I need to do. But I think something is desperately lost with the inter-collaboration. Just because people are talking doesn't mean ideas aren't being incubated. And I would also like to say, I think your concept is sort of class blind, because the folks you're talking about who can make this succeed aren't getting paid minimum wage or just a little above minimum wage.
So we completely agree that something is lost when you're working as an independent contractor by yourself, maybe in your home office. We absolutely believe that it's incredibly lonely and uninspiring, and it's tough. I mean, there's a lot of aspects of going to work, i.e. an office, that has nothing to do with work. It has to do with camaraderie. It has to do with collaboration. It even has to do with our own sense of identity. So what we're arguing is that that's still absolutely vital and important to being a happy, innovative, productive part of the economy. But the way we're going to aggregate people together is no longer going to be around, say, all coming to work for the same company. It's going to be around things like co-working spaces, which Ryan and I run and founded a company around, or it's going to be around meetups, or even, you know, people. That's why people work at the coffee shop is because they're looking for some of that camaraderie. And more companies are even trying to come up with ways to foster that that sense inside their own four walls. So we absolutely agree with you, and we provide a lot of advice in the book for how to overcome that loneliness and that isolation.
You mentioned co-working. I think we have a caller who does that. Jennifer in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jennifer.
Yes, good morning. And Brian, so good to be back in the area to hear your great show.
Thank you.
I was actually living in Berlin for 4 years. I moved back to the New York area last spring, and I would say that the U.S. is far ahead of Europe, I believe, in terms of innovative work options. And I brought up the co-working issue because I'm kind of in career transition, and I discovered a place like The Grove in New Haven where I was looking to possibly live. But I am back in Manhattan, and I know there's a place called the Harlem Garage, which is set to open very soon, which I'm on the mailing list for. And the whole premise is just that. That the idea that being around people, albeit in very different occupations, do better when there's some kind of, you know, interchange versus just going to the library or sitting alone in Starbucks. And I know a lot of friends, both here and on the West Coast, who are active members of these co-working environments and find that it does enhance their work.
Jennifer, thank you very much for your call, and welcome back to New York. We're just about out of time. Do you see any policy implications from this, or are you basically predicting where the private sector is going to head and offering people advice on how to adapt to that?
No, I think at the end of the day, I'm a former mayor, and Jeremy is a former economic development director for the city of Santa Cruz. So we come at this from a very policy-centric point of view. And our belief is that we make a big mistake if the left clings to an idea that's quickly disappearing of 40 hours a week and time and a half for every hour over and everything else that was great while it lasted for a certain percentage of the population. And the political right thinks we should just leave this all to the market, we're going to make a big, big mistake. And what we need is a bunch of targeted policies around retirement and health care, around collectivism, collective approaches to solving these problems that allow people to thrive and succeed. People shouldn't be out there on their own trying to piece everything together. There's an infrastructure that we need to create that allows them to succeed.
Are you an Obamacare fan because of what you just said? Because it moves people toward individual purchases through the exchanges rather than employer-based, which seems to possibly be fraying now, as we talked about earlier in the show.
Yeah, I think Obamacare for us is a good first step, but let's recognize that one of the big pieces of Obamacare is employers providing health care. If we're moving to a world of fewer and fewer employers, let's figure out a way that people can access affordable health care on their own or collectively through organizations in New York like the Freelancers Union.
Ryan Coonerty and Jeremy Neuner, co-founders of the Next Space co-working and innovation company and authors of the new book, The Rise of the Naked Economy, How to Benefit from the Changing Workplace. Thank you so much. Really interesting conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And talk about women in a traditionally male job. We will look next at the recent spike in the number of female farmers and why so many women are turning their backs on the corporate world. Rather than the glass ceiling, they're trying to break through what my next guest calls the grass ceiling. Stay with us.